Fourth unit, the house of Eustolios. Eustolios the Curian, having seen that his fellow citizens were in abject misery, he did not forget the city of his ancestors. But first, having presented the baths to the city, he was then taking care of Curian, as once did Phoebus, Apollo, and built a cool refuge sheltered from the winds. How do we know all this? But of course from the inscriptions on the mosaic floors that cover the biggest part of the building. The name of the owner of the house, Eustolios, as well as his Christian identity, is revealed through these inscriptions. And although it appears that the building was first erected as a private palatial house, after the laying of the mosaic floors and the construction of the baths, it was transformed into a public place of recreation, a kind of club. Having first visited the theatre and proceeding higher on the slope, in an also dominating position on the southeastern edge of the hill, we find the remains of an equally important monument of this ancient city, the House of Eustolios. It is a monumental house that dates from the end of the 4th, beginning of the 5th century AD. It consists of more than 35 rooms, which are concentrated around two interior courtyards and a bathing establishment of small dimensions. The building in its present shape was erected after the destruction of the theatre. Of particular interest are the mosaic floors that cover the biggest part of the building, which were completed in the early years of the 5th century AD, when Christianity was already well established in the city. We proceed towards the entrance of the house, which was on the western side. The servants' quarters were on the left, and just next to them, the entrance vestibule was located. Through this vestibule, the householder continued for 15 centuries, receiving and welcoming visitors through the inscription on the mosaic floor, which inscribes, "Enter the residence in good faith and joy." The vestibule connects the forecourt with the central courtyard, which consisted of a garden, a small fountain, and a fish pond. It is surrounded by porticos, the colonnaded courtyard, which was also covered with mosaic floors. Around the peristyle, that is in the reception and public use areas, are preserved the most important mosaic floors. Following the walkway that was made recently by the Department of Antiquities, and proceeding towards the most southeastern part of the site, we find in front of us maybe the most significant room of the house due to the mosaic composition of its floor. The great importance of these mosaics lies in its deeper symbolic meaning and in the connection of the building with the new veneration, Christianity, which is indicated through the inscription we read in ancient Greek. In place of big stones and solid iron, gleaming bronze and even adamant, this house is girt by the much venerated signs of Christ. The householder reminds us that all these buildings here were not supported neither on big stones nor on solid iron, on blonde copper or on this diamond, but only on the very blessed symbols of Christ. The coloured decorative shapes on the floor depict symbols of early Christian times, like the fish, the partridge, the peacock, etc. On the other hand, in its southern wing, a fourth fragmentary inscription reminded those who frequented the building that this was the house of reverence, prudence, and piety. In the same complex of rooms, and proceeding more north in order to go higher towards the baths, we find the inscription which indicates the public use of the building, its connection with Christianity, and the name of the owner. Eustolios, having seen that the Curians, although previously very wealthy, were in abject misery, did not forget the city of his ancestors. But first, having presented the baths to our city, he was then taking care of Curian, as once did Phoebus, Apollo, and built this cool refuge, sheltered from the winds. The inscription refers to the donator Eustolios the Curian. Having seen that his fellow citizens were in abject misery, did not forget the city of his ancestors. But first, having presented the baths to the city, he was then taking care of Curian, as once did Phoebus, Apollo, and built a cool refuge sheltered from the winds. As we may notice, the same inscription is also mentioning Apollo, Phoebus, as the previous protector of Kurien, the Roman baths. Continuing more to the north, the steps lead to the highest level of the house, where the baths were located. Proceed to the most northern corridor and stand so as to see the sea opposite you. The mosaic floor of a big room, which was part of the bathing complex, is unfolding in front of you. Public baths were a development of culture that was presented in the Greek space during the classical times and responded to a necessity that resulted from the growth of urban life and the rational organization of cities. The society was requesting henceforth the creation of buildings for exercising, for body cleansing and mind exercising. Do not forget the famous phrase that our ancestors professed, a healthy mind in a healthy body. However, in addition to their important role in physical and mental health, the baths constituted in all times a center for meeting and socializing, a place for communication and amusement. The architectural development of baths begins, therefore, in Greece in the 5th century. It is being crystallized in the 4th century BC and continues permanently up to the 1st century BC, when they were progressively replaced by the Roman hot baths. But how did the baths function? In their most simplified form, the Roman baths included in a row the room of cold bath, the room of lukewarm bath, and the room of hot bath. The first room in the row, the dressing room, apoditerium, and the cold bath, frigitarium, had a double role. Here, the visitors changed their clothes and took their cold bath. It was the best decorated room, which also functioned as a reception hall, since the bathers entered from here into the bathing establishment as such, and they stayed here, after having their bath, to socialize. The mosaic floor of the room has four representations in panels. Two are decorated with purely geometric patterns. One has a central picture with a partridge, and the fourth, in the northern wing, contains the only iconographic ornament in the entire complex. The bust of a young woman is depicted in a medallion with plait motifs, holding an object in her right hand that seems to be a standard measure. Actually, it is almost exactly the length of a late Roman foot. And according to the inscription in ancient Greek again, we read Ktesis, that is the personification of creation, the creation of the world. Off this central room, to the north and east, there were cisterns, swimming pools with cold water, and before each was a shallow basin for foot bath. The cold bath resulted after the advising of physicians, who recommended the cold bath due to the great benefits it contributed to the well-being. The room for the lukewarm bath, tepidarium, was situated west of the cold bath. The bathers' sojourn in this place helped the body to progressively adapt from the low temperature of the dressing room and cold bath to that of the next one, the hot bath, and vice versa. The hot bath, caldarium, was located west of the lukewarm bath and was the final destination of the bather, who could also have a steam bath here due to the humidity of the room. Today, the only remains of the lukewarm and hot bath are the hypocausts. As their name implies, they were usually low and underground spaces underneath the floors of the bathing rooms, where hot boiling gases produced by the fire which was burning in the firing chamber, praefernium, were circulating. Floors were higher and supported on serried brick pillars so as to resist high temperatures. Walls were heated by clay pipes or clay flat tiles fixed in the walls, leaving free space for the circulation of the air. We also see the firing chambers, the hearths, whence the hot air was carried through the hypocausts and up through special flues and through the space left between the walls and the facing of the ceramic tiles. The operation of the baths required large quantities of water, which originated from the cisterns and wells, but the solution for the water supply of the baths was given through the construction of big aqueducts. The water was stored in a higher cistern and was carried through pipes in the various parts of the bathing establishment. The sewerage system, through clay pipes which ran through the baths, was also advanced. The water that was poured on the floors rolled to the lavatories, which were situated near the baths. As we have mentioned, hot baths constituted important sanitary and recreation centres, carrying out a significant role in the functioning of society. In these places, the citizens socialised, exchanged opinions, and spread the news of the day. At the same time, the politicians shaped suitable conditions for the guidance of citizens and the growth of propaganda. For the construction and maintenance of the hot baths contributed the emperor and other powerful leading figures, the city, the upper class, noblemen that claimed some high office and tried to become popular and ensure their election in a high office. The human relation with water is mysterious, almost metaphysical, and is due to the cleansing power, the purifying attributes that the water has. It is not accidental that the Christian baptistery originates from the Roman bath, the Frigidarium. Don't you believe that current spas, sanitas per aqua, hydrotherapy is the modern development which maintains to a large extent the ancients' philosophy for the value of baths?